My son can whistle this song.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. I'm a great father.
Can you whistle this song?
Yeah, I taught him the best things in life.
Very important.
See?
Welcome back here to 560 WQM. A very good Thursday afternoon, everybody. Greg Likens filling in for Mark Hochman alongside Channing Crowder. The whistling one. Just picked up a new nickname. Eric Falero with us as well, as we've got a lot to get into today. So much going on in the world of sports. Right now, we're going to go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline and welcome in Clay Ferraro, sports anchor and reporter from Local 10 WPLG. You can follow him on Twitter at ClayWPLG. Clay, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, gentlemen, I'm just going to sit here and bob my head to the whistling for the next couple hours, if you don't mind.
That's a good song, man. I taught my son how to sing that good song.
I was temporarily transfixed by your whistling there, but had to recollect myself to talk to Clay.
Think about what it does to a 7-year-old. Mesmerized,
recount,
man.
Recount for Father of the Year. I think it's got to be Channing now.
Appreciate you,
there
Clay.
We go. I like that. Hey, Clay, we just have some news in here, South Florida. The Miami Marlins have unveiled their new primary logo and a secondary logo with some different colors. Overall, what do you think of what we've seen so far?
Oh, I like it. It's crisp. It's clean. And I think it's something new. And let's be honest right now, I think in South Florida, anything new we're excited about, because all our teams are right middle of the road. And you know, everybody's the greatest thing in sports right now in South Florida. Well, first off, the Florida Panthers are on a roll, so I'm not going to – I'm not going to forget about them, but the things that people are most excited about right now are the Vice jerseys and now I think these Marlins colors. So we needed something. We'll take it, right?
Oh, yeah, Clay. And are they trying to erase Loria? They're making a lot of moves real fast to erase Loria.
Well, it's funny. Did you see David Sampson on Twitter the other day? He said something to the effect of, yeah, hey, I've tried all this before, too, and it didn't work, so let's see. So, yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think they want as fresh of a start as they can get. And look, I mean, we know they're hitting the reset button. They're hitting the reset button and trading off a lot of these guys, and they're hitting the reset button as an organization. They hired Chip Bowers from the Golden State Warriors to try to come in and get some new marketing ideas. They're revamping the stadium. So I think it's a combination of erasing Loria and the memories that went on with that, and also just kind of branding themselves in South Florida. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I like this strategy, and I think there's nothing wrong with them trying to distance themselves from the previous ownership group. I think the bottom line, though, right, Clay, is that if they don't win baseball games on a consistent basis, coming up in the future, then it's not really going to matter, right? I mean, this is all good right now, and I think it's a good way to bridge the gap, but the bottom line, they need to put a winner on the field eventually, right?
Well, 100%, and I think they understand that, and I think that's sometimes the misconception when this stuff comes out. I know social media isn't exactly the greatest barometer at times, but when you see this stuff being put out, like some of the first responses you'll see from fans are, oh, who cares? Give us a winning team. And this isn't in place of that. If you talk to Derek Jeter, the first thing he'll say is, look, I want to win games. I want this team to win games. At the same time, the new thing all throughout sports, it's not just baseball, but you see this in football. The Atlanta Falcons Stadium is practically a gigantic sports bar and like an adult megaplex where you can go and play games and stuff like that. It's almost like one of those David and Buster's wherever you look. This is the new thing now, that you create the ballpark environment to be almost separate from the game itself, to where you watch the game for a little bit, but then you'll go find other stuff to do. So I think this is just kind of falling in line with what a lot of places are and then putting their own Miami spin on it. But no, this isn't in place of trying to create a winner. And I do think there's a misconception that this is almost like a sleight of hand. Like, yeah, we traded Giancarlo Stanton and we traded Christian Yelich, but look, shiny new ballpark. But that's not what they're doing. This is it's two separate things.
Clay Ferraro, sports anchor and reporter at Local 10 WPLG. Clay, if we transition to the Miami Heat, I saw you tweet about this. Hassan Whiteside in his season so far, is he getting enough credit for the level of play that he's shown so far?
No, I don't think so. And I think it's certainly a function of what we've seen over the last couple of years, be it through injury, through looking like he's disinterested and questions about the effort level and the battles with Eric Spoelstra. But I feel like we've all, in South Florida media at some point, have pointed those things out and been critical. So I think it's only fair, right, to come around and when the guy's balling, you got to say the guy's balling. And he's doing the things that when Pat Riley gave him the max contract, right, I think, sure, there's a pie-in-the-sky vision there, like, all right, maybe he's going to turn into Shaq. Maybe he's going to just turn into this next-level guy. But in reality, Pat Riley knew that this is likely what he's going to get, a guy that's going to go out there, top five in rebounding, top three in block shots. Right now he's second in the league in rebounding, first in block shots. That's what Pat Riley wanted. That's what he wants, the anchor of that defense, the guy to clean the glass. This is what they've been asking him to do. So the fact he's actually going out there and doing it, I think unfortunately it's being lost in the shuffle in what's been a disappointing season so far.
And Clay, as you talk about Whiteside, like, are you saying he's getting better or he's, you know, getting back to where he was at some point? Because I thought with this team, you know, going into a season knowing you really have no current All-Stars, we know we had Wade on his retirement tour, but you were expecting a lot of players to get better. They're putting a lot on Jay Rich. Hassan's had some good games, but are you seeing a lot of improvement out of these Heat players?
No, as far as Hassan goes, I think you're dead on. I think he's going back to the guy that he was and the guy that they wanted him to be. I think the role for him is not to go out there and turn into Hakeem Olajuwon, right? They want him to clean the glass. They want him to go over and block shots. And I actually think if you look at his numbers, I think he's doing a little bit more as far as not freelancing, but go out and block the shot. Be the dominant force on that side. Whereas before, I think there was a tough middle ground that he was, you know, they're trying to operate within the team concept and have him, all right, maybe not go over and help as much. Whereas now, I think they're letting him go out and do what he does best, block shots, be the dominant force in the middle. And if someone gets free behind you, then let somebody else go over and clean that up. So, I think with him, it's more trying to do all of that. My concern with someone like Josh Richardson so far is, obviously, the scoring numbers are up. But at what cost? His usage rate is a lot higher. He doesn't seem quite comfortable in that role yet. So I think he's improved. I think certainly the pull-up three-pointer is something he's going to add to his arsenal even more as time goes on. He's done it to this point. But I think the guy that I've seen the most improvement in is Rodney Magruder. I think Magruder is basically doing what they would like Josh Richardson to do at a little less usage rate. So you're not dominating the ball quite as much, but he's been beautiful with getting inside and throwing the lobs to the big guys. He's kind of finding his offensive game, the ability to handle the ball, and we know what he can do defensively. So I think those are the two guys that you look at as far as one of them increasing statistically, and then the other one, the optics and how he's playing and helping the team.
And I got to ask you about Spo, because there was a lot of, you know, when he had the big three managing personalities, and, you know, I'm trying to really figure out what NBA coaching is when you have these all-stars, Clay, because, hell, they're going out there, give him the ball, give LeBron the ball, he's going to get you 40 a night. But, like, right now the Heat are 6-8. If Spo is a Hall of Fame coach, if me and you were coaching the Heat, Clay, would they be 4-10? Like, when you have a – I'm just saying, like, when you have a team like the Heat have, like, how do you see what a great coach is when you don't have any stars?
Well, look, I think it's fair to question the job that he's done to this point. And you know, not so much. I think there's this – we're in this wild hot take sports talk society, right, where, you know, the thing that grabs the headlines is where you say, oh, Pat Riley's made some bad moves the last 2 to 3 years. He's lost it. He's done. Eric Spoelstra, they're off to a 5-8 start, 6-8 now after winning last – but he's done. He's a bad coach. Got to go. But I think the fair thing to do is say, hey, these guys have a track record of being good. They're not doing a great job right now, and they've made some mistakes. And I think the concern with this Heat team coming out of the gate is, much like last year, continuity was supposed to be their strength early in the season. They were supposed to pile up wins early on while other teams were adjusting to new players coming in because they were returning largely the same core intact. And not only that, guys, but they were starting off with a pretty soft schedule. Some of these games at home that they've lost, they're going to look back at the end of the year and roll their eyes and wonder what happened. So, you know, I don't know if you and I could go out there and be 4-10, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend to say, hey, I know this is what he should be doing. But I do know this: a team that historically has hung its hat on defense and toughness and going out there and just grinding and locking down the opponent, Channing, I think they're really having a tough time adjusting to these new rules defensively. The restriction of movement, that they can't seem to get a grasp on how to defend without fouling. They're also having a tough time rotating out the three-point shooters. So the very things right now that you need to be able to do to defend in today's NBA, they're not doing it. And until they do, I think this is kind of going to be who they are.
Clay Ferreiro, sports anchor and reporter from Local 10 WPLG, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Transitioning to football from the Heat, Clay, I know you're a Virginia Tech grad, so how do you handle weeks like this when your Hokies take on the Miami Hurricanes on the football field?
Well, I'm going to I haven't watched the new season of House of Cards on Netflix yet, so I'm going to bring my iPad to the station, and while our producer is watching the game and charting it, what's fun with this kind of thing is in our department, I have two Hurricanes fans who run the department, in Duke Elang, our executive producer, and Will Manso, and then myself, I'm a Virginia Tech grad. But I think what I try to do as much as possible is be objective about this thing. I was on with Alex Dono a few weeks ago when it looked like Tech was actually going to be good, and Miami had just lost the game to LSU, and I told him, I said, look, as long as that game in November is for the Coastal Division title, I'll be excited. I'll be happy. I mean, hey, maybe I can go to Blacksburg and cover the game. But now you got two teams fighting for a bowl berth. And I think, Greg, it's a very similar situation for both teams because I've followed them both very closely this year in that they both had significant quarterback questions. A guy coming back who is largely the same guy, a guy with a lower ceiling, but you kind of know what you're going to get. And then a backup in Ryan Willis at Virginia Tech and Nikosi Perry at Miami that maybe have a higher ceiling, but you're going to have to take your lumps along the way. And both fan bases felt the same way. Let's start the guy that has the higher ceiling. Well, we've kind of seen how they both handled it. And they also both had significant questions at the offensive coordinator spot or the lack thereof at Miami. So I think it's two teams that have been on very similar trajectories. The difference right now, guys, Miami has more talent on campus. I'm a little more bullish on their future, whereas with Virginia Tech, I don't know where they're going right now. I'm kind of, like I said, I'm going to Netflix and chill while that game's going on.
And, Clay, to speak about the Miami Hurricanes, these last two games and maybe a bowl game, which is crazy to be talking about Miami maybe making it to a bowl game, but a win, me and Greg talked about it earlier, winning these games are good, but don't you have to win them convincingly and put some points on the board to get some excitement going into the offseason?
I think that's part of it. I also think the big thing that you've got to do is, hey, let's see the guys that can play for us. Let's see the guys that are going to go out there and lay it on the line. The guys are going to have the attitude that you want to build into the offseason. And more importantly, let's see who's not. Let's see the guys that maybe we can't quite trust. And that's the same thing in the NFL, right? Look, Channing, I hate to bring up bad memories, but you certainly played on some Dolphins teams that were playing out the string at the end of the year. And there were guys that, hey, they were more concerned about, how do I keep healthy? How do I make sure that I don't ruin my own personal future as opposed to helping the team? And I think you run into similar situations here. This whole Kelly Bryant thing, I want to see how the team responds to this, because I know there was some social media stuff where guys really didn't seem to be happy that they were looking at bringing him in. This team needs to figure out the quarterback spot above and beyond all else. And the offensive coordinator and the quarterback go hand in hand, whether it's hiring a new play caller, whatever it may be, and finding a quarterback. So I want to see how these guys handle competition. I want to see how they handle being a little uncomfortable, because right now, look at what comfort has brought them. I think you need to get a little uncomfortable. You need to bring a quarterback that can kind of add some competition, similar to the Miami Dolphins. They haven't had it in a long time for Tannehill, and you kind of see what's happened there. So that's what I want to see heading into these last couple of games, going into the offseason. Who are the guys that are going to step up? And more importantly, how do they handle that Kelly Bryant visit next weekend?
Hey, Clay, I was on 1-15, man. You don't have to just keep telling everybody. I was on the 1-15 team. So, yes, we know it. But to be funny, we were trying to get a win. That's all we were. We lost 11 games. We're like, man, we can't go just defeated. And then we got a win against the Ravens, and we were like, yay, we're 1-12. Where do we go from here? So, to your point, yeah, those last 3-4 weeks were tough, bro.
So you're saying Cam Cameron needs to come back and coach the – Oh, I'm sorry.
Man, listen, Cam Cameron.
I'm sorry.
He walked into a locker room one time and told us, we just got the hell beat out of us by the Redskins. He said, from the outside looking in, guys, that was a heck of a game. I said, bro, you're on the inside. You're the head coach. What are you talking about? You're not on the outside. He was a disaster, Clay.
Did you have anything to say to that? Who responded to that? Like, what do you say when a coach walks in and says that?
Joey Porter used to kill him. Oh, he come with this silly stuff. Oh, goodness, he come with this dumb stuff. Joey used to just degrade the man right in front of him. He'll just keep talking real lame. Oh, son of a big
buck. He was what I thought of. I was thinking, how would Joey Porter respond to that? That's just not going to go over well with Joey Porter.
And it didn't. Joey used to kill that man. It's funny. I was tight. I'm still friends with Joey. I used to feel bad for Cam Cameron, how Joey talked to him.
Ooh.
Be like, Jay Peasy, man, Peasy, take it easy. He might cry.
Oh. I believe it, though. Oh, I believe it. Though.
Failed forward fast, right?
Man, yeah. He's failing somewhere.
Yeah. Clay, we appreciate the time. We encourage everybody to watch you on Local 10 WPLG. You can follow on Twitter at ClayWPLG. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, gentlemen. Sounds good. Always good to be on with you.
All right. There he is, Clay Ferraro. Nice enough to join us here. Talk all things South Florida sports when we come back. Channing, I want to get your thoughts on this new Marlins logo. Plus, there had to be some other fights that you had.
Oh, I got a bunch of them written down.
Okay. We want to hear more fight stories
from the
locker
room. Rex Hadnott, that came to the top.
Our inspiration being Draymond Green. That's next year on QAM.